This is the In Focus podcast from The Hindu.
Hello and welcome to The Hindu's In Focus podcast. My name is Jayant Sriram and I'm your host for today. We're coming to you live on the day of voting in Tamil Nadu, Kerala and Puducherry. And in this episode, we're going to be discussing the major issues at play in Kerala and give you an overview of the assembly election there. I'm joined today by The Hindu's Chief of Bureau in Kochi, S. Anandan. Sir, thank you for joining us on the podcast today.
Thank you, Jayant.
So, you know, the biggest talking point of this election is the possibility of the LDF government coming back to power. This is an event that, I mean, you know, the government in power returning is an event that hasn't happened for many years in Kerala. So how historic could this be? And what are some of the factors since 2016 that could help the LDF buck this long trend of anti-incumbency?
Yeah, in fact, if you look at it, the last 5 years have been pretty crisis-ridden for the state of Kerala. If you recall from 2017 onwards, a string of crises hit the state, starting from Oki in 2017, and then came the Nipah virus infection, and then back-to-back floods in 2018 and 19, and came the pandemic, the COVID pandemic. So it's been a crisis-ridden period, and the government believes that it's been able to do a pretty good job of staying in solidarity with people and to support them also to sail through the crisis. They were able to give PDS supplies not just to people in the BPL category, but to those in the APL category as well, because the COVID times, the lockdown period, if you recall, Kerala set up a lot of community kitchens. Kudumbasri kitchens were set up and a lot of neighborhood groups, they came together to help one another. A huge volunteer force was also formed at that time to deliver food kits and deliver supplies at doorsteps. So this was termed as a huge success and people appreciated it too. On the heels of this, they were also able to disburse pensions well in time. Now, looking at the infrastructure upgrades that have happened over the last 5 years, using the vehicle of KIFBI, a body corporate created by the state of Kerala, Kerala Infrastructure Investment Fund Board, which is generated about 60,000 crore and 10,000 crore works worth about 10,000 crore have been carried out so far. And this has been one way of generating funds for development, and not just that, for fast-tracking development as far as the government is concerned. So using these two things, I mean, infrastructure development by way of KIFBI and schools, if you look at the work, specifically in the education and health sector, they've been able to do pretty well in the sense schools have got smart classrooms, new buildings, and in terms of infrastructure and equipment upgrade in the health sector, public health sector, at all three levels, they've been able to put in systems. They've been able to augment the medical staff in the primary health center, which have been converted into community health centers. Secondary level in the taluk and district hospitals, they've even got cath labs and all. The medical colleges were upgraded. So holistic healthcare was undertaken, the government argues. And all this was done with the help of KIFBI. So the government believes that they've been able to do a good work in education sector, the health sector. And then a lot of roads were constructed, a lot of flyovers constructed using KIFBI funds. So the argument is that the welfareism of the government and the development, the infrastructure development will be appreciated by the people. One reason why the government believed so was the fact that they were able to do well in the left front was able to do well in the local body polls in December last year. That's why they think that despite the setbacks in terms of the developments following the Shabrimala verdict, the church feud, or the string of allegations leveled by the opposition, left front believes that they stand in a very good position to make a comeback this time around. And then this is historical because 1980 was the year when these two fronts, the left front and the United Fronts, were formed in Kerala. Ever since, you have had these two fronts alternating, being in power. So if the government manages to make a comeback, it's going to be historical because it's going to happen after three decades.
Right. In your last answer, you happened to mention Sabarimala and the church feud. So which kind of brings us to our next question. So the biggest factor, I think, that could stop the LDF, you mentioned a lot of impressive achievements in governance that they're trying to project as their campaign plank. The biggest thing that could stop the LDF is the changing social alignments in the state. And this is something that the BJP in particular is trying to capitalize on. So how do you see this reflected on the ground? And what are some of the major issues that we can talk about here? You mentioned already Sabarimala, so maybe we can start with that.
Yeah, interestingly, today is the poll day. And from morning onwards, all the leaders, top leaders across political formations have been talking about Sabarimala. So Mr. Pinarayi Vijayan in the morning said in response to a question that all the gods of Kerala would favor left front. And then in response to that, there was an apology demanded from Mr. Vijayan by A.K. Antony, former union minister. And then Uman Chandy also said that the government shouldn't have allowed women to enter Sabarimala. And then Mr. Sudhakaran, working president of Congress, K. Sudhakaran, he sought the help of mythology and said asuras are never favored by devas. And he likened the left front to asuras. So from morning onwards, if you look at it, and Shashi Tharoor also made a similar statement saying that it's too little too late for the government to make a statement or on Sabarimala and to say that they are with the believers. So if you look at it from morning onwards, it's comments in abundance about Sabarimala. So Sabarimala, it is as if you get a feeling that Ayyappa himself is a candidate in the elections.
Right.
So Sabarimala has been there on the horizon right from day on. I mean, opinions have differed because in 2019, Sabarimala was a factor. It came soon after the Supreme Court verdict and a round of fiasco. Social fiasco with people taking sides and fighting over Sabarimala. So the situation was quite tumultuous all over the state. Although the government, to a great extent, succeeded in preventing any violence over this. So initially, the Congress and the BJP welcomed the verdict, but then later on, they claimed they sensed the people's pulse and they changed their stance. The government was caught in a dilemmatic kind of situation. But with pressure mounting on the government, they were forced to provide protection to people going to Sabarimala. Two women managed to enter Sabarimala later on. And now both the BJP and the United Front took it as an opportunity to accuse the government of secretly taking these two women, whom they say weren't believers, to Sabarimala. So there was a massive ruckus in the state in the wake of the Sabarimala verdict in 2018. And it was a great topic of debate during the elections of 2019, which went in favor of the UDF. They got 19 of the 20 seats in Kerala. But then times changed. Then came this the pandemic, after which the government earned a lot of goodwill from the people. And so that is why the left front believes that The issues in front of people at the moment are those related to livelihood, are those related to employment issues, are those related to well-being, seeing this pandemic through and all that. And Sabarimala is not an immediate issue as far as they are concerned. But still, everybody is forced to make a comment or a remark on Sabarimala.
Right. And what about the church feud that you were talking about? Where does that have its origin and how is that playing out?
See, the BJP was not able to make inroads in Kerala because its vote share had almost like remained stagnant for a long time. Not stagnant, actually. The growth was very incremental. 2000s, it was just 4% and it grew to 15% in the 2016 assembly election. There was an opportunity that came their way when the Catholic Church grew very uncomfortable with this question of love jihad. And how it happened was people were complaining, the laity, members of the laity were complaining about interfaith marriages involving Muslims. And if you recall, there were reports of the Christians going missing, Christian girls going missing, and then reports of them, some of them even joining ISIS and all that. So in the backdrop of this, the Catholic Church, in its last synod, it passed a resolution against the practice of love jihad. Although they admitted later on that the word shouldn't have been used and they could have better worded. The point was that the church was very apprehensive about interfaith marriages involving Muslims. So this created a lot of discussion in Kerala, and it was just a matter of time before the BJP leader started holding discussions with leaders of the Catholic Church. So this was widely perceived as the church moving closer to the BJP, because the Muslims were seen as a common enemy. But then not everybody in the Catholic Church agreed to this. But at the same time, a section firmly believed and clearly spelled it out in public that such a practice was in existence, although the courts ruled to the contrary. But then the recently reported incident of nuns being heckled on a train in Jhansi in Uttar Pradesh ruffled some feathers in the Catholic Church, and they were forced to make statements against that because the nuns were accused of trying to convert people. So, if you look at the manifesto of the BJP here in Kerala, they've spoken about protecting faith, just like the UDF has done, the Congress-led UDF has done in their manifesto. And when Mr. Adityanath was here, the UP chief minister was here campaigning for his party and the front, the NDA, he said the BJP, if voted to power, will bring in legislation against conversion. So this also did not go down very well with the church. But anyway, having said that, the BJP was able to gain a toehold within the Catholic community. That's one. Secondly, there is this issue of the Orthodox and Jacobite factions of the Malankara Syrian church at war with each other for a long time. It is a centuries-old issue. There was this Supreme Court verdict in 2017, which favored the Orthodox faction. The whole dispute was about control over parish churches. The Jacobites are traditionally votaries of the left front, so it is believed. And the Orthodox faction is seen as closer to the UDF and the Congress. Control of 52 churches had to be handed over to the Orthodox faction. Some were forcibly taken over because the court intervened and the government found itself again in a very sticky kind of situation. The burial rites of Jacobites were denied in certain churches, which were restored by the government by way of an ordinance. And although the Jacobites remained grateful to the government, they wanted more. They wanted the government to bring another ordinance to restore their control over the churches, which the government said it. The chief minister mediated talks between these two churches, but then the talks were unsuccessful, following which talks were held in the presence of Prime Minister Narendra Modi in Delhi, which was again followed up by the RSS when Manmohan Vaidya, one of the general secretaries of the organization, came down to Kochi. He held discussions with these two factions. This was unheard of in Kerala. This also provided grist to rumor mills. And a lot of people interpreted it as Orthodox and the Jacobite factions moving closer, just like the Catholics, closer to the BJP. But then, having said that, the BJP was able to make some headway. Although they've antagonized the largest minority in Kerala, the Muslims, they've been able to win over at least some Christians. And that is why they hope that they'll be able to do well in the polls in central Kerala.
Right. So when taken as a composite, you know, all these issues, we spoke about Shabarimala, we spoke about the church feud, the fact that the BJP is gaining a bit of a foothold among the Christian community, perhaps. Does that indicate that there is a definite kind of communal flavor to this election in terms of people discussing, you know, communities and which way they should vote? Has that been a predominant factor in this campaign?
Yeah, that's right. In fact, community equations have always been important in any election. But then this time around, in an unprecedented way, all these things have been in the open. There was a lot of mudslinging, a lot of misogynistic remarks made by different political leaders, mostly hovering over Shabarimala and protection of faith. Love jihad boogie was also raised by some. Even yesterday, there was this poster put up on Facebook by one of the Congress MPs, which was widely decried on social media as misogynistic, which had this very vulgar portrayal of a woman being carried on a basket by Mr. Pinarayi Vijayan, probably to Shabrimala. So this was all in very bad taste. So the left front actually was hoping that the campaign would be basically around issues of development. So they took a very conscious decision not to be carried away by the communal statements made by political formations, other parties or alliances. The debate was largely about Shabrimala, about questions of faith, about community equations, about love jihad or the absence of it. That's why even on the day of polling, this is being discussed from morning onwards.
And so, yeah, now that we've discussed that social equation, a little bit about the politics and the leaders involved in this election. Mr. Vijayan, I think we've kind of covered his party, his front, what they hope to project. The BJP, of course, is their big, well, I mean, they see it as a victory, but the roping in Mr. Sridharan, who is, of course, famous for the Delhi Metro project. So he is the kind of major face in this party. How is he faring and will he make an impact at all?
Yeah, before I come to that, I think I should touch upon this political realignment that happened in Central Kerala, because the left front probably thought that the Shabrimala would put them on the back foot. After the death of K.M. Mani, patriarch of Kerala Congress from Pala, when his son took over as the chief of the party, there was a split in the party, and the Joseph group stayed with the UDF, and the Jose K. Mani faction that was with the UDF came over to the left front. So in Central Kerala, KCM is a force to reckon with. And the left believes that even if they are to lose a couple of seats here and there in the south and the north, this time around, Central Kerala, which is generally believed to be an area where the UDF has done well traditionally, the left thinks it stands a good chance to win a couple of seats more. That's one. Secondly, now back to your question about Mr. Sridharan's advent. Sridharan is a very popular figure in Kerala, not just in Kerala, all over the country. So his joining the BJP has certainly helped it. It has boosted the image of the party. But then his utterings have been quite, I must say, quite disastrous. He claimed that his membership in the BJP has changed the face of the BJP as a pro-development kind of party. That's one. Secondly, his statements about Shabrimala, about the state of Kerala, and his insistence on only talking about positive things and not issues that are being discussed in society. But having said that, he continues to be quite popular and certainly helped the party get a pro-development kind of image. But to what extent that will translate into votes for the party, something that remains to be seen.
Right. And just finally about the Congress and their campaign, has it been effective at all?
Yeah, the Congress, in fact, started pretty late. As always, there were issues within the party and they took a long time to finalize their list of candidates. But then the Congress was able to field quite a number of youngsters. Going into the campaign, they were able to get their act together, and towards then they were able to put up a united face. And the manifesto committee was headed up by none other than Dr. Shashi Tharoor, who is a very popular figure in Kerala. So it helped a lot since he campaigned and he was making statements about what is on offer from the UDF stable. And Rahul Gandhi and Priyanka Gandhi campaigned extensively, although towards the end, in the last couple of days, she couldn't come because she was under observation for COVID.
Right. And besides the Congress and the BJP, the other parties we spoke about, are there any interesting new entrants in the field this time who may make any kind of impact?
Oh, no, there is this BDJS, which was formed by Tushar Vellapalli. This was formed in the run-up to the 2016 assembly polls. They are back in the fray. And they have aligned with the BJP, so they are part of the NDA. It's a constituent of the NDA. So they have fielded their candidates. And then, interestingly, there is this corporate-sponsored political party called 2020, which managed to get a panchayat earlier in the last local body polls. But in the local body polls held in December last year, they managed to expand their rule over four panchayats. So for the first time, they fielded their candidates from 8 constituencies in Ernakulam, and they are likely to cut into votes of UDF and the LDF in at least some of these constituencies. There is another outfit that is named V4 Kochi, which also had fielded its candidates in the local body polls. Number of people who quit Aam Aadmi Party in Kerala had joined this V4 Kochi, and they fielded their candidates from some of the constituencies in Ernakulam. So these are the new players there in the poll fray in Kerala, especially in central Kerala.
All right, we'll wrap up this episode here then. Thank you, sir, for joining us for this overview of the election, and perhaps we can regroup when we have a better idea of, say, projections or to talk about results. But thank you for your time today. In Focus will be back soon with analysis of the biggest news issues. In the meantime, you can find our podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and other platforms. Just search for In Focus by The Hindu. We'll see you soon.